Welcome to the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving. We provide education and information on senior care topics. Here's your host, Ryan McInniff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving. We give you information and education on senior care topics. My name is Ryan McInniff. I'm the owner of Minute Women Home Care. I am the host of this show, and I am here alone with my trusty co-host, Janet. How are you, Janet?
Now, how can you be alone with somebody?
I guess I was pointing out that we don't have a guest, because the last like 4 or 5, we've had guests.
Okay, that is true. It's just us.
It's just us. We're back to like the original two.
It's the just us team. That's fine.
There were a couple podcasts that I put up that were called Blitzes, where I would be at home working and I'd see something cool online, but I knew that we were like swamped for the next few days, so I'd just record something real quick. So that was really kind of weird. Like, hopefully somebody's listening to me, or I am just blabbering on to myself. Like,
well, you're preparing to be an elderly person. It's a little confused.
Well, at the time, I wasn't even thinking. I was like kind of thinking like Will Smith in that movie where he's the only like one alive and everybody else is vampires or whatever. And it's like, maybe this is just for the record for where the world ends. And somebody knows there was a guy named Ryan McInniff talking about senior care.
You made your mark.
And they didn't know that nuclear annihilation was coming. And, and you know.
Can you tell it's Friday?
50,000 people left on the earth, but you know they all got their genetic differences now because of the fallout.
There you go.
Anyways, but that's what it. Sometimes we were just talking. It feels like it's like, does anybody listen to this?
Yeah. Well, sometimes I call it staff meetings. I'm talking to me, myself, and I.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Then you don't feel so alone.
So, anyways, yes, it is Friday, and you know, I remember like when we were starting this podcast, I was like, we're going to have trouble finding stuff to talk about once we go through like the major, what do you do to prevent falls? What do you do to prevent, you know, this, that, and the other? And I feel like every week, I subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. So every week I feel like there's another article or two that I print out that are like, yep, here's more stuff on seniors. So it's becoming more and more the trend. And what this is talking about is the loneliest generation. Americans, more than ever, are aging alone. And that's the title of this. It came out in early December. Obviously, we didn't have some time to get to it, but it doesn't matter. It's still relevant. But basically, it's talking about how baby boomers are aging alone more than any other generation in U.S. history. And the resulting loneliness is a looming public health threat. About 1 in 11 Americans over the age of 50 and lacks a spouse, partner, or living child, census figures and other research show. So, I mean, you're dealing with more and more of a population that's aging alone.
And it seems weird because that's the big bubble of a huge group of people. You'd think there'd be buddies or something everywhere.
Yeah, you'd think that it would be like, hey, there's millions of us. There's an assisted living cropping up on every single corner, it feels like.
But more than gas stations and coffee shops.
Yeah, it's like Dunkin' Donuts and assisted living.
It's true. And yet, you know, when you think about it, this group, as huge as they are, this was when there was the turn in what used to be what they call the nuclear family, you know, and there was mom and dad and the kids, and there were these close family ties, and family ties aren't quite the same for this generation.
Correct. And the other thing is with the internet, and this is a positive and a negative wrapped in, you know, with Facebook, the beauty of Facebook is you can stay connected with people that otherwise, you know, you wouldn't. I remember my mom would have the 2 or 3 hour long conversations with a close friend that lived, you know, states away every quarter or every, you know, 5 or 6 months or whatever it was. And that's how you kept in touch, or you wrote a letter, and then eventually email came around, and now it's all instant messaging, right? So you can immediately text somebody.
Yeah. The neighbor doesn't come for tea or coffee
anymore. Correct. Yeah. And so, you know, it's very surprising, but I mean, there are a lot of things that come to this. You know, you're having a generation that's more and more alone. So what happened with the baby boom generation? You know, divorce became more prevalent. You know, you had two working parents in the in the home.
Latchkey kids.
Absolutely. So college became more prevalent. And so the family dynamics of the kid goes somewhere else, and then mom and dad may be divorced, so the divorce rates are higher. Or, you know, and the other thing is we got sicker, we got fatter, we got
we live longer.
So the likelihood, you know, baby boomers were known for that kind of, you know, maybe the last generation of heavy smokers. You know, where there were a lot of, so, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, my dad's alone because my mom was a heavy smoker. And so, you know, now he's not alone. He has a girlfriend, but he was going to be aging alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but one of the things that came out of this article that, to be quite frank with you, kind of bothered me was, without a doubt, like it says, researchers have found that loneliness takes a physical toll, and it's closely linked to early mortality, as smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day or consuming more than six alcoholic drinks a day. Loneliness is even worse for longevity than being obese or physically inactive. So it's really, it's really kind of that old saying is, you know, you hear about people that retire and then a week later they pass away because they had no reason to get up in the morning
anymore. Their purpose is gone.
Yeah, their purpose is gone. But, you know, one of the things that I found difficult to understand, and the article goes on to some more other interesting, like lack of social contacts among older adults costs Medicare $6.7 billion a year, mostly from spending in nursing facilities and hospitalizations. But one of the things that kind of bothered me was that a lot of the examples they use feel like the examples that they use are people that just need to be more active in the community. There is a plethora of places you can go that people need something. There are communities that you can go to if you don't have money. There are, you know, volunteers. There are There's anywhere to find people, and it just seems strange that a lot of the examples are like, well, I can't find anybody, and I'm all alone in my house by myself. Well, then do something about it.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's very true.
And I don't mean to sound and listen, if there's an example out there where somebody is handicapped and it makes it extremely difficult to get out of the house, that's a completely different story. Mm-hmm. A lot of the examples in here, when you look online, the person's going out to the grocery store, the person's, you know, maybe they're using a walker, but there's still mobility there, and there's still the ability to.
Yeah, and I mean, there are some people that their personality is just an introvert. I mean, I can speak to people that are at assisted living, and there are those people that are social, and they meet their friends or in the dining hall, and they go to activities. And there are other people that never leave their apartment unless it's to go eat. So they're in a community. All they have to do is walk out the door, and they don't. They're not a groupie, as they like to call themselves.
Yeah. So an example in this is Miss Lettice from Virginia, got divorced at 39, remarried at 42, and was a widow by 44. Now age 70, the former senior executive says she struggled to find a new partner. After she retired 7 years ago, Miss Lettice, worried about isolation and inactivity would hasten the onset of dementia that runs in her family, she began volunteering to drive older homebound seniors. She went on a trip to France with a tour group, although she didn't know anyone else in the group. So that's kind of an example of this person is disappointed that she's not dating. Right, like that. There's a difference between dating and social isolation.
May not be her own person, so to speak, but she's being active.
She's volunteering. She's going out. So there is that, and without a doubt, I can understand her concern about that. But there are other examples in this where, you know, the gentleman just sits at home and doesn't do much. You know, a gentleman, a 68-year-old retired federal IT worker who lives by himself, was carrying groceries to his Washington, D.C. Row house 2 years ago when he fell and his knee gave out. Overweight and unable to get up with no phone in reach, he lay there for at least 2 nights as dehydration and urinary tract infection led to sepsis. His kidneys started shutting down and he grew delirious. He said he would yell out every once in a while, but you know. Nobody was there.
Yeah. You know, when I think about it too, there are a lot of couples that are kind of living alone together. You know, they're that person who lives alone and only goes to the store. There are people that they just sit in their house and wife makes supper and they hardly ever talk. And I mean, I think that it is an emotional isolation that's kind of come about. And yeah, that leads to depression and or it leads to anxiety and, you know, some heart issues and all, just because if someone gets excited and, you know, we joke around sometimes or hear about, don't you feel like yelling at the TV? Well, you know, you can get your blood pressure up and be the only person, you know, and that takes its toll on your body too.
Sure.
You know?
And, you know, one of the things I wonder is part of this part of just having such a large swath of a population aging? Like, you know,
there's something to that.
Are the percentages the same, or are they more, or are they higher or less based off of, you know, if there was 1,000 people or 100,000 people or 1,000,000 people, is the percentage the same out of the people that are lonely? But just because there's now, you know, 100,000 people a day or 10,000 people a day, I forget the number off the top of my head, but there's a huge amount of people turning 65 every single day in this country.
That's right.
That, you know, when you have such a huge amount, that's where it's coming. And this is more of an article explaining, hey, this is another problem that's coming from having such a bubble of people that are now getting into their old age, if you will. And, you know, this is the ramifications of having so many people aging, and between divorces, between family dynamics, and between, you know, people passing away that inevitably do when you get into your 60s and 70s and 80s, people are more alone nowadays.
Yeah, I think that does have a lot to do with it. And you look at even the current generations, those since the greatest generation, and how many people live in apartments and don't know their neighbors.
Yep.
And so it's being rooted. It's having a tie. The whole concept of community. You know, there was that saying in the past of it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it also kind of takes a village to help grandma and grandpa too. But I think that whole concept has kind of fallen away. And to your point, I think, you know, they're reading that article. There's some people that it really is sad that they're lonely, but yeah, they could, in some of those instances, I think they could do something about it. It's not like someone's going to do it for them. You know, and the idea of someone that lives alone and falls down and gets hurt, there isn't another person to necessarily care for them. That becomes a healthcare issue. What do you do with people that have to rely on self-care?
And like my girlfriend's mother, she lives with another friend of hers. And obviously it's multiple benefits to it. Financially, it makes sense, as well as safety-wise, it makes sense. If one of them has an issue, there's somebody there that is able to call 911. There's somebody there that's able to help out in a time of an emergency. So they looked at it as, hey, listen, it's better to team up than it is to
pool your resources and look out for each other. Yeah.
You know, there was another example, you know, that in here where the lady had basically a divorce in the mid-90s. She's 70 now. Mid-divorce that left her estranged from her two daughters and without anywhere to live. Friends let her sleep on couches in a garage as she scraped by on jobs as a home health aide and a Walmart greeter. Sometimes she slept in her car. You know, obviously that's a really sad story. Mm-hmm. But I also think, like, part of me says, well, what happened with that your daughters are no longer involved in your life? Mm-hmm. Like, that's usually, those are family dynamics where money or a relationship or you slighted somebody that can be unforgivable, and that thing happens, and then, you know, it ends up being, hey, listen, something happened, and now you're alone. Well, you know, that's.
Yeah, and I think too that kids become independent at a much younger age. You know, you'd have the kids around to a certain point, and so they're going off on, and that whole sense of independence and leaving the nest, and you know, it just the whole thought of you listen to people's holidays, and they're certainly not Norman Rockwell Thanksgivings, yeah. You know? It's like you want everybody to be civil. That's not to say everybody's like that, but it's, you know, in our work, how often do we get the phone calls after Thanksgiving or Christmas that, man, and these are people who care about their family, but they're like, wow, you know, Mom really needs some help. It's been a year since they've seen Mom.
Yeah.
That didn't used to be the way things were. You got together for all holidays or whatever.
Or you were over there every Sunday for family dinner.
Exactly.
No, and you know, I guess one of the things that I guess my point in the beginning of the podcast was, if you're feeling lonely, then it's your job to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to be able to get you out of isolation other than really yourself. And one of the things that I thought was great about this article is that actually, ironically, in Boston, a cluster of seniors in 2002 banded together to form a quote-unquote village so they could lean on each other for household services, social activities, and old age planning. That spawned 350 similar groups nationwide in what is now known as the Village to Village Network. Members can tap rides to doctor's appointments, handymen, and activities like meditation and bowling. So, you know, and the gentleman that fell and was left outside because he didn't have anybody, and he was starting to fail until somebody must have found him, join this group. So I think that's a perfect example of a gentleman that realized that there was a problem with his senior isolation,
mm-hmm.
and went to fix that problem because he needed the help, and he didn't want to experience, and certainly didn't want to pass away, but didn't want the experience of being, you know, left for dead, basically, because nobody knew that there was a problem in the first place, you know. And I think, you know, like a neighbor stopped by after the, you know, they tried to call him 2 or 3 days in a row and he didn't pick up the phone or something along those lines. But if it wasn't for that neighbor, you know, then he probably would have passed away because of, you know, the issues that he was having.
Yeah. I mean, I'll see some people in my community that I know they're older people and they're living alone, and the only time I see them is picking up some milk in the supermarket, or if I see someone at church. And it's amazing how there are people that, you know, they're there just to connect to something, you know, because without that, you do get the risk of injuries living alone, healthcare things that don't get picked up on. And a lot of people, just because of the healthcare costs, aren't cooperating or being compliant, as we say. They're trying to stretch medications, or I love the phrase of, you know, if I don't go to the doctor, nothing will be wrong.
Yeah.
Well, if you're by yourself, you can take that pretty far. If you're in a group with someone else, they'll say, hey, Fred, you're not looking so great today. How are you feeling? You know, and those are that little connection. And that's, yeah, without that, it must be a huge sense of loneliness.
Yeah, so I mean, it's one of those things where the article brings up some valid situations. I guess I misremembered, and I thought I knew there was one where I maybe it was in a different article where the gentleman was able-bodied and he was able to get up and do things, and he was just kind of, woe is me, I don't have a mm-hmm. social circle. I know I can envision the guy's picture, but apparently it wasn't in this specific article. But in today's day and age, there's plenty of reasons, and it's just, you know, going out and being as active as possible. And then I think it's such a great idea that
those
folks
village networks
started these villages, and
yeah.
and they're leaning on each other. And, you know, he said, yeah, it gives me a reason to get out of bed. It gives me a reason to go. You know, I go. He's saying he goes to, you know, balance class, and he allows him to socialize and see people. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's, and then when you miss a day, people go, hey, Joe, why'd you miss today? Or, hey, Nancy, I didn't see you, you know, playing pickleball the other day.
Yeah, we missed you the other day. Where were you?
And then it's like a sense of, oh, hey, you know, I'm not used to you. I know that my dad, I think that was really important with him in recovering, you know, over my mom's passing. My mom was more of the social butterfly of the couple. She was the one that had
the connector.
The connector. She was the one that was outgoing and, hey, let's go on dinner. And my dad at one time said, I don't know why your mother keeps inviting these people over to dinner. every week they come over. I have nothing else to talk to him about. I see him. I see him three. He made a good point. I see him three or four times a week playing golf. And then we come over. I talk to him about politics. I talk to him about world news. Pop culture. I got nothing. So I laughed. And it was like, hey, you know, hey. He goes, what? She wants him to come over. We'll come over and we'll have a couple laughs and a couple drinks and whatever. So he was saying it with a bit of tongue in cheek. But he's like, I'm running out of things to talk about with these people. But, you know, when my mom passed and he moved over to the East Coast of Florida, you know, that was a big thing for him to find a social circle, mm-hmm. get in with his own crowd and be able to have a place to go 4 to 5 times a week for dinners and for golf and everything like that, because it would have been miserable living alone and not.
Yeah. And you lose a perspective. You lose what's going on outside your own four walls. You know, to your point about your dad wondering what to talk about, my brother and I one time were talking about when we were small, every Sunday was Sunday dinner at my grandmother's, and two of my uncles and their kids would come. And, you know, as kids, we'd play in the backyard. And because we were the little ones, we ate in the kitchen, not in the dining room. But we're sitting there saying, what did they talk about every Sunday? You know, it was like, but there was never a lack of conversation. And now people seem to be much more isolated in conversation. And you think of people too, their life has been their work. And it's not even like they'd go home and cut the grass because there's somebody cutting the grass or whatever. And those were ways people that would see the neighbors or whatever. That whole concept has kind of changed. So people like, no, what do I do? You know?
Yeah. You don't have that reason to get up or
the obligation to participate. Yeah.
Yeah. Then it be, you know, you feel forgotten, and then it's, you know, I think it's what Wall Street Journal is saying is it goes downhill quickly from there.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, it's something to really think about, because that, you know, that's that kind of that mental health side of things that in this country and as humans, we kind of forget about or we dismiss easily as quote unquote crazy or whatever it is, because, you know, when somebody breaks their arm, that's a problem. You can see that this arm no longer looks natural.
Correct.
When you're dealing with an internal problem with whether it's self-esteem, whether it's, you know, mental health, whatever it might be, that doesn't, you know, as we all know, there's no, you know, red flag that immediately pops up on the back of somebody that as they walk around saying, I'm having an issue here and I could use some help. And so, you know, that's where I think my aunts and my uncles banded together when my dad moved into the same general area, introduced him to everybody at the golf club, introduced him to everybody because that was maybe a little bit out of his comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, you know, once that ice was broken, he could kind of like, you know,
find his new norm.
Yes, exactly. Kind of thing, and yeah. He was more comfortable with everything, but he just didn't like breaking the ice. And then all of a sudden, you know, now he's out and doing his own. He doesn't even see his aunts, my aunts and uncles, his brothers and sisters as often as they'd like, because he has his other circles that he's going around to. So,
yeah,
you know, it worked out very well for him to be able to get
to
out
do
there.
That. Well, you know, I think about it. There's several companies on TV that have their financial companies, and they're talking about, you know, we have people that can talk to you about what your retirement's going to look like and what you want to do. And there's all this emphasis on, you know, what are you going to do and look at your finances. You don't see the same kind of concept of, well, what are you going to do with your time? Who do you want to be when you get old? We used to say, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do when you retire? Because people that have things to do or a place to go or a network, they end up being far healthier people.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's the gamble, right? It's the gamble. Like, I remember when my mom got sick, she was like, you know, we were hoping that this hit at 70. Like she was like, I knew I was going to get cancer. You can't smoke 2 packs a day for 40 years and not expect there to be
some major.
You're
dodging a big bullet. Yeah.
That's, you know, a Matrix style dodge.
Yeah.
And so she was just hoping it hit her, you know, by the 70s, where I guess in her head, it was like, give me 8 years or 10 years of retirement where we can go on some trips, we can have some fun. And then at 72 or 73,
you have insurance.
Yeah, then we can, you know, I guess her thinking was, you know, by the time I'm in my early 70s, mid 70s, I'm probably slowing down anyways. And then it won't be as much of a crushing defeat versus, you know, when it hit her, she was, what, 2 years out of retirement. So she was still able to play golf 3 or 4 times a week. And then all of a sudden, you know, they were in a new phase in their life with retirement. So, you know, they were just getting used to their way of life. And then that's obviously uprooted and things are quickly changing. So that was her kind of thought process on, I mean, obviously nobody wants to get cancer, but her thinking was like, well, you know, let's be honest here.
Well, my dad calls it his sell-by date. And when you're past your sell-by date, everything's gravy.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's got to be, I remember we had a case where a gentleman was going to dialysis 3 times a week and he was using us, you know, for days and for daytime help. And, you know, at one point in time, he called up and he said he canceled services. I don't know if you remember who I'm talking about. He canceled services and we talked with the daughter and the daughter said he's done with dialysis. He's like, he's not, his quality of life isn't better. All he does is sit around and wait for a Red Sox game to come on and then he goes to bed.
Yeah.
And he's unhappy. He's miserable going to the doctors to clean his blood 3 or 4 times a week. He's done with this. And that's his choice. Hey, good for you, man. Like, if that's where, you know, unfortunately, if that's the cards you've been dealt at that point in time in your life, and you're saying, hey, listen, I'm folding. Like, this isn't any fun anymore. You know, I think he lived alone with he didn't have, like, a spouse anymore. Mm-hmm. So he was ready, and he kind of just said, hey, listen, let's rip this Band-Aid off, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it affects everybody differently, while maybe if you had a spouse, it would be a little bit different.
Yeah, and you know it's an interesting thought that you know there are people too that will have a terminal illness, a cancer, or whatever, and the nurses and the receptionist, they become their social network, and that becomes their life. You know, it's nobody outside of that. It's just them and, you know, Nurse Nancy and the receptionist, and you know.
And that's why there's a lot of people that don't want to do hospice cases for that very reason, because all of a sudden, you know, you hear about surgeons, for example. Like, surgeons obviously do their very best that they can to save lives, but the nature of the business is that you're not going to hit 100%.
Exactly.
And so they don't, you know, not that they don't want to know, but there's a professional level of not getting to know your patients very well, because if you do, that messes with your head and you're not in the game on the next one because you're mourning the loss of a patient that you liked.
Yep.
And I'm sure every surgeon inevitably gets attached to somebody at some point in time, but we have plenty of caregivers that do not want to be in hospice cases. And when we did the article we talked about the article on the Globe, one of the things they were talking about was that they were hired somebody on for their mother and the caregiver said, I'll be around, but I don't do death.
Yep.
I don't do death. And, you know, we all sit there and go, you know, death is the scariest part of life, right? Like, you don't know what's going, you know, whether you're religious or not, nobody's 100% sure. Like, you don't know what's on the other side, and you don't have anybody, you don't have any phone calls to tell, let you know that it's okay. If we all knew that heaven was the greatest place on earth, well, nobody would be worried about dying, right? So, you know,
do you want to know when or not? That's a forever conversation.
Absolutely.
With people. Yeah.
And so, you know, this family was kind of hurt because, you know, the toughest part of life in this caregiver's, you know, in their eyes is bailing. But she let him know up front, like, I'm not going to be around for the death. I can't do it. And, you know, it's got to be difficult. When I remember when my mom died, you know, they were dumping pills and putting them down whatever they did. I think they either flushed them or they put him in the sink and turned on the grinder and got rid of the pills because it's not only they don't want him around for the family, but they don't want him available for the nurses and the aides because, you know, it's a tough thing. And then you start self-medicating and, you know, that's a tough part of the process that you bring up. And, you know, that's the tough thing that we have is a lot of caregivers, not a lot, but there's a certain number of caregivers that don't want to be around for hospice because they get emotionally attached to the patients they're caring for. That's the nature of our job.
Yeah.
And that's so difficult to say goodbye and know that somebody's passing away.
Yeah. It's like, there's an old song called The Tears of a Clown, but there are so many people that are comedians, clowns, whatever, and you see all this upbeat and behind the door, you know, there's this person that all of that compassion and whatever's got to go somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
And some people handle it really well, but those are the people that often have good outlets. And
well, to put it even closer to home with Minute Women, we have a home health aide supervisor. We promoted her from being out in the field to being a home health aide supervisor, but one of the contingencies she told us is that she's not available on Thursdays because she has a case that she is obligated to go to because the woman is on hospice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as much as the business part of Ryan goes, hey, listen, yeah, like, we need you, you know, let's go. The empathy side of Ryan and the caregiving side of Ryan is like, well, if that was my mom, would I want somebody ripping the caregiver out of the case and giving them an ultimatum that says, hey, well, we're here to provide care to people. So listen, 4 out of 5 days a week, we can handle. And when this person
bring that compassion to work here with
you. Yeah, absolutely. You know? So, you know, that's the thing. But getting back to kind of the senior loneliness, it certainly is a difficult thing that I think is going to continue. And I think part of the reason we're seeing so many articles in the Wall Street Journal, and the Wall Street Journal is more finance based than some of the other, than the Globe or whatever. You know, usually Wall Street Journal is based around the financial aspects of things, but
there's a financial cost to this.
Financial cost to this, and it's just, you know, surprising that week after week we see, or maybe every other week, there's a pretty prominent headline in the Wall Street Journal that's talking about what certain things are impacting the baby boomer population and how that's affecting all of us in one way or another through Medicare and Medicaid and social service projects and services that we provide. So, you know, it's something to think about when you're dealing with, if you have family members that are isolated or alone, maybe try some ideas out on how to get them out of the house. You know, you have websites like Facebook and Meetup and Eventbrite that allow you to find groups and happenings that are going on. And even if your family member isn't aware of how to use the website, well, you can use the website, find out when the groups are going on, and then say, hey, you know, I'm going to RSVP for my mother, and then send the Uber or the Minute Women transportation, or have them drive themselves over to that to get that social interaction. It's all out there. It's just a matter of going out and finding it.
Yeah. And there are a lot of volunteers for people that where transportation is the issue, and whether it be a church, elder services, a community center, they'll go and pick people up and bring them over.
Yeah.
And they can get some networks that way, and everybody doesn't have to play bingo. There's all kinds of things to do.
Tons of stuff out there to do. So, you know, and then I remember when when she first retired, she immediately got a job at the golf course. Now, part of the reason was they got free golf. But the main part of the reason was she wanted to
be social.
Wanted the social. And if her and her husband are going to be playing golf, well, shouldn't we get to know the other people that are out there in the golf community so that we can become friends with them, that we can, you know, do these activities with them? And then all of a sudden, boom, that, you know, 6 months later, my dad's complaining that the people are over too often for dinner. You know, so it worked.
to that point, I can remember one time at assisted living, the person in charge of finance was as crazy a Bruins fan as I am. And it was during the playoffs or something. And we knew there was one guy who had been a photographer, sports photographer. So we said, hey, what if we just stay after work and we have some popcorn and something to drink? And they were entitled to have their beer. We weren't dealing with any dementia or anything. And we'd sit up in this room and we'd put the game on. More and more people started joining to watch the game. And there was this one lady that was sitting there, and she says, I have to say, I don't know anything about hockey, and I don't drink, and popcorn gets stuck in my teeth, but this is fun. You know? It was just, they were so bummed when the season was over, or when they played on the West Coast, and the other person and I maybe couldn't stay that night, you know. It really was so important, and it was just a hockey game on TV.
Yep, that's all it took.
It was huge. It was fun.
Well, excellent, Janet. Thank you for your insight on this, and if you're looking to, well, I should have done the plugs in the beginning of the show, but oh well. If you're looking to be a guest, we are looking for guests. We do have a number of guests that have been on. If you're local, that's great. If you're not local, that's fine as well. We can record the podcast over the internet with you calling in or logging in through the internet. All you need is, you know, some headphones and a microphone. You know, most cell phones come with that, with the earbuds with a mic attached to it. That's all you need, and we can do that. And check us out. We're uploading a lot of YouTube videos. We're doing the podcast. Check us out on our blog, mwhomecare.com. Obviously, if you have questions about senior care, you can give us a call, especially if you're in the Boston area, 781-862-3300. And otherwise, we'll catch you on the next one. Have a great day and have a great weekend.